The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
And then on top of that, as you know, the world right now is spiraling out of control. You might not have seen what's happened because it was a few hours ago. A lot of people were here. There's so many people outside, which we appreciate. But a lot of people were here a short time ago. Iran launched 181 ballistic missiles at Israel. And I've been talking about World War III for a long time. And I don't want to make predictions because the predictions always come true. We're not going to make, but they are very close to global catastrophe. We have a non-existent president and a non-existent vice president who should be in charge, but nobody knows what's going on. She was at a fundraiser in San Francisco, a city that she totally destroyed, by the way. It's Joe Biden and Kamala Harris made Iran rich in a very short period of 3.5 years. They have $300 billion now. Ever since Iran has been exporting terror all over the world, and it's been just unraveling. The whole Middle East has been unraveling, but of course the whole world has been unraveling since we left office. Russia would have never attacked Ukraine. This would have never happened in the Middle East. It wouldn't have been on October 7th. You wouldn't have had inflation. You know, we'll go to a different topic. You wouldn't have had inflation. None of these things would have happened. How about Afghanistan, the most embarrassing moment in the history of our country, in my opinion? No one is in charge of our country, and it's not even clear. Really, I mean, who's in charge between the two of them? You have a president, I guess. You have a vice president, I guess. She should have never been chosen because she never got any votes. I'm not a big fan of his, but he got 14 million votes, and that was a coup.
You know what I can say, Jim? I can say that 13,099 murders were led into this country, 16,000 rapists, 425,000 people in the last 4 years have been led into this country by Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's own Customs and Border Protection that are running around this country, Jim.
The other thing, too, it's Kamala Harris. I don't know. Is there, why do you guys say Kamala? That is, it's Kamala Harris. I just...
Jim, we know that they're committing crimes against Americans. Why can't these individuals talk about the individuals who've been killed by illegal immigrants? 13,099 murderers have been led into this country by this administration's own accounting, and you guys don't want to talk about it.
That last bit there with Jim Acosta, it's perfect. It perfectly illustrates everything that's wrong with the regime media. Here you've got this invasion at the border, all the murders, all the rapists coming across the border, the criminals, hundreds of thousands of them. And Jim Acosta, CNN, the regime media, they want you to know how to pronounce Kamala. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel, Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. Thank you for the feedback for yesterday's special presentation. We condensed the September 22nd exhibit grand opening, or at least the grand opening for the Tell Don Steely. That was yesterday on the program. The final speech given in that ceremony was by Dinesh D'Souza, an excellent speaker, really eloquent, and had some very deep and thought-provoking comments regarding biblical archaeology and the Tell Dan Steele. So if you haven't seen that that speech by Dinesh, make sure that you watch yesterday's show. You can go to both of those websites I just gave to you to view it. So, a lot to get to on today's... I mean, the world is in chaos everywhere that you turn, and you've got the big debate last night. We've got all of the clips, all the highlights, all the montages. As I said on Monday's show, I mean, you really... You don't know where to begin in a lot of ways. I mean, you could queue up three or four different montages for the cold open because the world is burning. The world is burning. And just like I said, coming out of the weekend on Monday's show... where they wanted to make sure you knew about Donald Trump's latest insult. He said Kamala was mentally impaired. And now there you see it from Jim Acosta. You don't pronounce the name right. You know what's revealing, too, about that clip? The fact that he said, why do you guys say, you know, Kamala? In other words, we're on different teams. It's us, CNN. It's the regime media against you guys that mispronounce names that would dare insult Kamala Harris. The world is burning, Jim. Everywhere you look, there's chaos. How do you just walk right over rapists, murderers, by the thousands being invited into the country? In another time, you see, even those journalists would be held responsible. They'd be held responsible for their traitorous coverage. They don't care. They don't care about the murders. They don't care about the rapes. They don't care about the flooding. They don't care about billions going to Ukraine when we don't have any more resources for the Southeast. We played that clip for you Monday. They don't care about inflation because they're all millionaires. They don't care about a wide open border because they live in a gated community. I mean, the violence and the chaos, it's going to push up to their gated communities before long. And then we'll see if they change their tune or not. But here is an administration, a fake one at that, that has blood on its hands because its policies have led to murder and rape. Listen to Miranda Devine. I had this clip for Monday's show, didn't have time to get to it, clip 12.
There's blood on Kamala Harris's hands. She's the border czar. She doesn't care. And I mean, the hide of the woman to go down to the border and start blaming Donald Trump for the crisis that she's created. She has 4 more months as vice president. She could fix this tomorrow with executive orders. She could get Joe Biden, who seems incapable of doing anything, does whatever he's told, fix this problem. They could fix it tomorrow. She won't. She doesn't care. It's political. And I think Donald Trump was quite right when he said today that she should be resigning, not running for president. No politician who is responsible for this disaster, for the tragedy that has befallen a lot of families with being murdered or raped, their loved ones, and the future. I mean, this is going to be so difficult to somehow remove between 10 and 20 million illegal migrants from this country is going to tear the country apart. It's going to be very hard if Donald Trump wins to do this properly. It's a legacy that's been left for this country to suffer for generations to come. I cannot believe that she's getting away with this.
She's gotten away with it. She's the border czar. And as I said Monday, I mean, here she goes down to the border for the 20-minute photo op, does nothing, blames Trump. And right as she's doing that, the ICE director comes out with this letter to that U.S. representative saying that, yeah, this is what we know. We've allowed 13,000 murderers to come in and 16,000 rapists, in total 420-some-thousand criminals. We've just invited them into the country. We don't know where they all are. We don't know where a lot of them are. 20 to 25 million illegals just floating around. Illegals that the Democrats hope will vote. Get them across the finish line in November. The world is burning. And, of course, this is why. Even in the debate last night, this is why Tim Walz, this is why Kamala, this is why they won't go and interview anywhere unless they absolutely have to. And even then, it's with the most, I mean, look at the two moderators last night. Yet again, it's 3-on-1. Yet again, we supposedly heard going in that CBS would not fact check J.D. Vance. That was my favorite part of the debate. When they fact-checked J.D. Vance, and then he fact-checked them back. It was brilliant. We'll get to the debate in just a bit, but first listen to, this is a Fox News exchange, Kayleigh McEnany and Jesse Waters from last night about, again, I think Charlie Hertz in this clip as well. about how they just will do everything possible to avoid the issues. And the issues, they're all around us. The dumpster fire issues, they're everywhere. This is clip 15.
Exactly what you said is what the American people are feeling. Iran is on the brink of nuclear weapons. The longshoremen are about to make sure that the supplies you need in your household are not available because of a strike that Joe Biden failed to negotiate. Donald Trump would have had the art of the deal between the longshoremen and the company. And that's before we get to raging inflation. And that's before we get to the mess of the world Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have made.
And of course, also the media is desperate to talk about anything other than the issues, because they know if they actually allow the debate, allow the election to wind up being about the issues, Donald Trump is going to win.
Anything other than the issues. He's right. He's completely right. Laura Ingraham touched on some of the same themes. Clip five, I think.
In just 2 hours, you'll see what will likely be the final debate of this long election season. J.D. Vance versus Tim Walz. It comes on a day of chaos around the globe and more suffering here at home, with two major crises unfolding. A port strike that could end up costing the U.S. about $5 billion a day, and the human tragedy, an infrastructure collapse from one of the deadliest hurricanes in American history. Now, the death toll has stood now, I think it's at about 159 people. Tragic, entire communities flattened. Americans are still struggling to get the basic necessities, like water. And overseas, a significant escalation. Iran retaliated against Israel's successful decapitation of Hezbollah's leadership and launched at least 180 missiles into Israel, lighting up the sky. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu warning Iran that it will learn a painful lesson. We attack back. Now, Americans are watching all this, and they're wondering, who's really running the country tonight? After all, you know, they dumped Joe from the ticket because he presumably was not up to the task.
We made this point right after Joe Biden was shoved aside. If you remember, this was back at the end of July, I think it was. But if you remember, they said, well, he's not mentally fit to run for office again. And then on this program, we said, well, there's 6 months left of his presidency. I mean, these 6 months, we're just going to see one crisis after another, and that's what's happening. We still have 4 months left of it. 6 months. And who's running the country? Who is running the United States of America? Richard Palmer's morning brief today. Iran fired 200 missiles at Israel yesterday in its biggest ever direct attack. Israel and the U.S. intercepted the missiles with no Israeli deaths, though one Palestinian civilian was killed in the West Bank. I think it's because the missile fell on him. So that's it. I mean, there's quite a few commentators saying that this was another disaster for Iran. So Israel just keeps on winning. They've decapitated the leadership of Hamas. They've done it with Hezbollah. Iran had to respond with something because it's been embarrassed. And so it fires off 181 missiles, and not many of them hit their target. They're taken out in the air, the Iron Dome. And now you've got Bibi saying, we're going to retaliate. This is really astonishing to watch. I mean, I went through the prophetic implications on Monday's show. You can go back and watch that. Listen to this montage, or watch this montage regarding the missile attack on Israel. Clip 9.
The world is holding its breath over the fear of a much wider Middle East war after Iran launched a new attack on Israel. Incoming ballistic missiles filled the night sky over Israel more than during Iran's previous attack in April.
Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu saying Iran, quote, made a big mistake firing a barrage of about 180 missiles at Israel and, quote, will pay for their actions.
Iran launched a large-scale attack of over 180 ballistic missiles directly from Iranian soil at the state of Israel. There were a small number of hits in the center of Israel and some other hits in the southern Israel. The majority of the incoming missiles were intercepted by Israel and a defensive coalition led by the United States. Iran's attack is a severe and dangerous escalation. There will be consequences. Our defensive and offensive capabilities are at the highest levels of readiness. Our operational plans are ready. We will respond wherever, whenever, and however we choose, in accordance with the directive of the government of Israel. Iran and its proxies have been attacking Israel since the 7th of October on seven fronts. Iran and its proxies seek the destruction of Israel. The Israel Defense Forces will continue doing everything necessary to defend the state of Israel and protect the people of Israel.
Oh, God. Okay, guys, we got to get off the roof. These are coming down right next to us here.
Everybody is talking about now what Israel will do next.
You!
A significant escalation, for sure. Richard Palmer says here, there could be more to come. Iranian Chief of Staff General Mohammad Bagheri said that if Israel is not contained by America and Europe and intends to continue such crimes or do anything against our sovereignty or territorial integrity, tonight's operation will be repeated with much higher magnitude and we will hit all of their infrastructure. Well, that may just be bluster. We'll see. There was the video. I think it was a Hezbollah guy that's now put in charge. He was giving a statement somewhere in a bunker or a closet, judging by the background. And he's wiping his face. You know, he's sweating profusely because he's probably worried about the next bunker buster to take out the latest leader of Hezbollah. Israel is on the march. And they're going against not just Iran, they're going against the Western media as well. Because they firmly support the terrorist cause, for sure. They have since October 7. I mean, there was maybe 12 hours of decent coverage. After that, they went right back to usual. And then since that time, what have we seen on college campuses? All of these pro-Hamas demonstrations. You can't explain any of this except with Bible prophecy. The hatred, the unhinged hatred for the Jews in this case, or here in the States, for Donald Trump. How in the world does the port, the people run, I think there's 36 ports. Laura Ingraham touched on it. They knew their contract was coming up. Nobody in the Biden regime negotiates anything. Now, these guys are, the demands are ridiculous. They want like a 75% raise. But as the head guy said yesterday, I mean, if we shut it down, there's lumber and all these other goods are not going to be coming into the U.S. So you're just going to have more inflation. How is that not negotiated before yesterday? So now the strike hits. We'll get to that a little bit later if we have time. Coming back to the attack, Iran's attack yesterday. Really, the bigger attack was what happened in Tel Aviv. Seven people were murdered in a terrorist attack at a railway station in Jaffa, Israel, yesterday evening, with 17 wounded. So they had a mass shooting that was kind of obscured by the fact that they sent 180 missiles a few hours later. The world is in chaos, and leave it to the fake administration, the illegitimate administration, to, just like they did with Afghanistan, we see the chaos play out on video, on TV, and then they step in front of the microphone and say, hey, this is perfect, this is mostly peaceful, this is wonderful. Listen to the regime as it talks about as a I remember a Carolyn Glick piece from years ago where she talked about the fantasists and the realists, the ones that see the world as it is, and then the ones that see, that they look at the world and they see a fantasy, or they create a fantasy narrative. That's what these people are doing. It's pure fantasy. This next montage, I think Jake Sullivan leads it, where he's talking about just how peaceful it is in the Middle East. And he said this just days before. Just days before October 7. So this montage goes back a year, and it brings you right up to date with what we're seeing today. Clip 8.
And the Middle East region is quieter today than it has been in two decades.
Let me say again to any country, any organization, anyone thinking of taking advantage of this situation, I have one word. Don't. Don't.
What is your message to Hezbollah and its backer, Iran?
Don't. 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 Don't.
What's the message to Iran?
Don't.
As President Biden said, just don't.
Exactly. One word. Pretty straightforward.
Clear, obviously, that don't didn't work. Does the president have any regret over not punching back harder in any of the prior responses that he's taken to these proxy attacks on U.S. forces?
I would, I think I would push back on the idea that we didn't push back harder.
Yeah. Mr. President, what is your message to Iran in this moment?
Don't.
He's also been very clear, Kate, that we don't want a war with Iran. We don't seek to widen and broaden this conflict. We don't want to see things escalate.
Has President Biden considered maybe beefing up the public Iran posture to be more than just one word?
You're referring to don't.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about...
And they did it anyway.
And let's talk about what we did, Peter. Let's talk about don't and did.
I'm here to provide a brief report on the Iranian ballistic missile attack against Israel that occurred earlier today. I can take just a few questions because this is an ongoing situation and I need to get back to my desk. Today, Iran launched nearly 200 ballistic missiles towards targets in Israel.
He needs to get back to his desk. That's a nice way to duck the tough questions. Jake Sullivan, just a year ago, this was the New York Times. Jake Sullivan's quieter Middle East comments did not age well. That's the New York Times, Jake. Just 7-8 days before October 7. Yeah, the Middle East has been quieter than it's been in decades. And then there he is yesterday, acknowledging the obvious. And then saying, I've got to keep this short because I've got to return to my desk. That's what all of these people should do. The U.S. policy regarding Iran, don't? Are you serious? That's embarrassing. Don't. And yesterday, Iran says, do. And what's going to happen? If anything happens in response, it'll surely be coming from Netanyahu, because you know where the dear leader stands on this. He wants little Israel obliterated. He wants them blotted out. That's what he wants for America. Fundamental transformation. Don't. Are you serious? These people with their rhetoric, they sound so tough, so strong, and then they're just embarrassed. What must the Kamala people, I'll say your name right, okay. What must the Kamala people be saying or discussing behind closed doors? The world is burning. Then the doors open, they come out in front of the mic, and they lie. They say, hey, this is great. We've been so tough on Iran. Listen to the French lady from yesterday, clip 2.
This is an ongoing situation. He had to get back to his desk to make sure that he continues to monitor what's happening, occurring, having conversations with his counterparts as well in Israel. But this administration has not lifted a single sanction on Iran. We cannot forget that. Rather, we continue to increase pressure. That's what we have seen. Our extensive sanctions on Iran remain in place, and we certainly will continue to enforce them. And you heard from the National Security Advisor. You heard what he said today.
Iran's oil exports have reached record levels now. One report showing 3.2 million barrels per day, according to OPEC. That's about $90 billion a year. So when do we cut off that revenue?
We have not lifted a single sanction. If anything, as I said moments ago, we increase pressure. That's what we have been doing.
I just noticed at the start of that clip, she also commented on how Jake needed to get back to his desk. Isaiah 3, these are children. These are delusional children. They've lost their minds. They're deranged in their thinking and reasoning. They come up with every possible excuse. The first thing Joe Biden did when he came into office, illegitimately, the first thing he did was lift sanctions that allowed for Iran to export $100 billion worth of oil every year. And you saw it in the cold open. President Trump says they've got $300 billion now. They're swimming in cash. And yet there she is. Yesterday, as the bombs were flying into Israel, saying that they haven't lifted one single sanction. Well, if that's the case, then why don't you come out and admit that Trump had it right? That we're just doing what Trump did. They want it both ways, don't they? Trump's Hitler. And then when the bombs start flying, they say, hey, we haven't removed any sanctions. If anything, let's talk about what we do. Let's talk about how tough we've been on Iran. No. People see the dumpster fires. They see a world in chaos. No wonder Tim Walz was so nervous last night. No wonder he couldn't really come up with a good response to anything. Now, I think J.D. Vance could have gone in for the kill. But the one thing you take away from a debate like that is that Vance, and you see it in Trump's rally speeches as well, they know the issues. My father makes the point in Great Again that Donald Trump, one of his great strengths, besides his courage, is that he can see the bitter affliction. And now more than ever, because the election was stolen. So now he sees the inside of the deep state. Before, he saw it pretty good. But now, I mean, the corruption, the evil, the filth, the lying, the stealing, the murder. They tried to assassinate him. Here we have another debate. We've had two assassination attempts on the front runner for the presidential election, which is just over 30 days away. And it doesn't even come up in this debate, just like it didn't in the last debate. But be assured, we're gonna get into January 6th. We've definitely got to cover January 6th. This was the only thing they had to hang their hat on, the regime last night, is that right at the end of the debate, January 6th is brought up, and did Trump lose the election? And J.D. Vance, supposedly, he dodged the question. So there you go. Tim Walz won. Please. Listen, this is an off-Broadway play, by the way. Where is that clip? It's later in my notes. The off-Broadway play about, you guessed it, January 6th, clip 10.
Down everyone who was there. You know that, right? You know that.
Yepers.
Videos and cell phones.
Government's closing in.
Isn't that, you know, bad?
I don't care.
How can you not care?
Because I didn't break any laws. Tell me the law I broke.
You smashed through police barricades and you overtook the United States Capitol.
I didn't break any laws.
You carried your weapon on the federal grounds.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, I carried my weapon on the federal grounds that we own, that American citizens own.
Paying taxes gives you no right.
I pay taxes.
What?
I had every constitutional right to carry a weapon and take over Congress. Just because a law is written does not mean it's the right law. We went in there, they scurried away like rats and hid. That is how you do it.
That was a scene from the new off-Broadway play, Fatherland, which opened last week.
Yeah, MSNBC is really excited about this new play, January 6th. Notice, this is based loosely, as you can see there, I carried my weapon. We were overtaking Congress. They walked in there, and everything died out after 4 hours. And then Congress comes back and certifies the election. They can't look into it. That was the whole point of the fake surrection, so that Ted Cruz and company would not investigate all of these cases of voter fraud. This regime, they have promoted and reminded us of January 6th probably 100 times more than it ever happened with 9/11. The off Broadway show on January 6th. And of course, the Trumpster, he was carrying a weapon, and his mission was what? To overtake Congress. This was his right as an American. They based this loosely on that case where the son called the FBI to turn in his father because he was at the January 6th protest. There you go. Of all the things that happened on January 6th, has there been a movie or a Broadway play about Ashley Babbitt yet? No, that won't happen. If there's a second one to come out, it'll be on Sicknick and how that they bashed his head with a fire extinguisher. They lie, just like KJP. They get up and they lie. We haven't lifted one sanction. We are living in a world full of chaos. And then the propaganda to go with it. What a dangerous time we're in. 2 Timothy 3:1. By the way, my father, we just completed this excavation in Jerusalem. We were going to have a festival over there in 2 weeks. And a couple of weeks ago, my father decides we're going to have to cancel that because the hostilities there between Israel and Hezbollah and now Iran, it's just too intense. So we canceled the festival. We had about 60 people planning to go there. We have two families presently living in Jerusalem, running the institute that we have over there. We had another family that was there because all the students were there. And then 12 students and alumni that were participating in the excavation. And my father decided a couple weeks ago, we need to get them back quickly. And some of them were scheduled to leave. Well, all of them were scheduled to leave next week. But even when we pushed it back, we had one of the families that was supposed to leave today. Ben-Gurion Airport is completely shut down. So anyway, we pushed that forward as much as we could. Sunday, a family leaves. Monday, a family, and then all the students leave. And then Tuesday, yesterday morning, the final family leaves in the morning, and then the missiles come raining down in the afternoon. I mean, really, the sense of God's timing. We've been pointing this out all summer long. We're past the summer now. But with the June 27 debate, you know, the train wreck for Joe Biden, and then the July 13 assassination attempt, go back before that to June when my father said Trump's not going to get assassinated. Or before that when we've said Donald Trump's coming back. I mean, that didn't seem likely 3-4 years ago when they were trying to assassinate his character and then assassinate him legally. And now actual assassination. And yet despite all of this, look at who the front runner is still. God is backing his work. God, I've been making this point in various ways with both of my Bible classes this year. If God is on your side, I mean, he backs you with tremendous power. Tremendous power. So we want to be on God's side. We want to do something with this message. We can't just, if you look at Matthew 28, I think it's verse 19. God says to the disciples, go! Go and make disciples of all nations. We're not supposed to receive this precious truth and then just kind of hole up in a closet like that Hezbollah leader. We have to go out and reach people with God's message. God is pleading with this world. God is saying, just look to me. I'll back you with power. You may have to stand alone, but you're standing with God. That's what this world needs, is a message backed by the boldness and the courage of God himself. God is proclaiming his truth. And most people just want to bury it. Even those that receive it or that hear it and maybe they kind of like it. They lack the courage, so many of them, to do something with what God has given us. I mean, there's some people today in the United States anyway that are showing some political courage and they're really urging people to do something politically, to get out and vote and that sort of thing. But what about standing up for God's truth? We've lived through a time where most of God's people have fallen away from the truth. Most of them have rebelled against God. It was so bad, you see it in 2 Thessalonians 2, that God had to send strong delusion just to test our love for the truth. To test our love. To see if we really love the truth of God. My father makes a statement in that prophet, one of his booklets. In this last hour, the battle will be fierce. There will be times when I won't have time to sit down and say, let's negotiate. There will be decisions made where we'll have to know that God is using the elder. Know that God's using his leader, in other words. I mean, that's the way it was with the decision to get him out of Jerusalem. Our students, alumni, our families, we are engaged in war. In that same booklet, my father says we have to fight and fight and fight. I mean, he was the first one to say fight three times. That was in a booklet from 20 years ago. Donald Trump said it more recently on July 13th when he was nearly murdered. That's the world we're living in. It's chaos reigns supreme. It's everywhere. And so, of course, the communists are going to go and hide under a rock when it comes time to give an interview. They don't want that. They don't want it. Listen to Tim Walz as he tried to explain, you know, the Tiananmen Square thing. He just lied. And last night, he says he admitted he misspoke. I forget how he described himself. It was pretty funny. Moment of truth. This is clip 6 from Jesse Waters.
Tonight, Walz has one job, stop the bleeding. So far, Walz hasn't been able to do that. Harris is far behind where Biden was with men, and the assistant coach hasn't been of assistance. He's been booed at college football games. His ties to China are under investigation, and he's been caught lying about his military record. Not to mention, the way he carries himself physically has been, let's say, less than manly. Walz will have to defend his record in addition to Kamala's and Biden's. And just like Kamala's debate strategy, look for Walz to attack Trump nonstop and offer no solutions. Because if the Democrats had any solutions, they would have solved things by now.
I think Walz called himself a knucklehead. And then later he says he misspoke. And I mean, right out of the gates, the poor guy, I mean, he couldn't really formulate much of a stance on what's happening in the Middle East. This is J.D. Vance, where he fact-checked the biased moderators. Clip 3.
Just to clarify for our viewers, Springfield, Ohio does have a large number of Haitian migrants who have legal status, temporary protected status.
Well, Margaret, but
thank you, Senator. We have so much to get to.
Margaret, I think it's important because
we're going to turn out of the economy.
The rules were that you guys were going to fact check, and since you're fact checking me, I think it's important to say what's actually going on. So there's an application called the CBP One app, where you can go on as an illegal migrant, apply for asylum or apply for parole, and be granted legal status at the wave of a Kamala Harris open border wand. That is not a person coming in, applying for a green card and waiting for 10 years.
Thank
that is
you,
the
Senator.
Facilitation of illegal immigration, Margaret, by
Thank
our
you,
own
Thank you, Senator, for
leadership.
Describing the legal process.
Laws,
we have
Kamala
so
Harris
much to get to, Senator.
Those
we
laws have
so
been
much
on the books since 1990.
Thank you, gentlemen.
The CBP One app has not been on the books.
It's since 1990.
It's something that Kamala Harris created, Margaret.
Gentlemen, the audience can't hear you because your mics are cut.
It's perfect. Margaret Brennan, what a disgrace. She gets in her little jab about Springfield, and then we have so much to get to. We've got to move on. But we do have time for me to editorialize, to lie to you. And J.D. Vance, to his credit, he just started talking and giving her the facts straight up. You can see how much they didn't like it. They cut his mic. It's a debate between these two candidates and these ladies and CBS behind them. They cut J.D. Vance's mic, of course, as he points out that, look, these aren't legals. They're coming in because of something Kamala and Joe Biden says that, well, they can do now by the stroke of our pen, executive order. Did I mispronounce her name? Kamala. There you go. I don't want to offend anyone. They don't like it, the regime, when they're fact-checked. They don't like it when you mispronounce their names. They don't like it. They don't like it when you send out a mean tweet. They don't like the truth. The ones that want everyone censored are the ones lying. Obviously. Obviously. Listen to J.D. Vance as he drops a truth bomb on the Harris-Walls ticket, clip 4.
Honestly, Tim, I think you got a tough job here because you've got to play whack-a-mole. You've got to pretend that Donald Trump didn't deliver rising take-home pay, which of course he did. You've got to pretend that Donald Trump didn't deliver lower inflation, which of course he did. And then you've simultaneously got to defend Kamala Harris's atrocious economic record, which has made gas, groceries, and housing unaffordable for American citizens. I was raised by a woman who would sometimes go into medical debt so that she could put food on the table in our household. I know what it's like to not be able to afford the things that you need to afford. We can do so much better. To all of you watching, we can get back to an America that's affordable again. We just got to get back to common sense economic principles.
I mean, this was so bad for Tim Walz. I mean, you saw it in his facial expression. I guess those two are not the best freeze frames for the candidates, but you saw it in his facial expressions, and you saw it in his opening response. You saw it throughout the night. If the regime media doesn't rush to say you crushed it, then you know it was pretty bad. Play montage 1.
There is no doubt in my mind, however Governor Walz did in terms of sincerity, that Vance won this debate.
Does Governor Walz have a problem with the truth? No.
They were talking. At one point, Vance wanted to correct something about how Haitians got into this country. And he was right, and the moderators wouldn't let him correct it. It's very interesting.
But at the beginning, the two issues driving the campaign right now are Harris has a big deficit on the economy. Harris has a big deficit on immigration. And Republicans were happy tonight, and Democrats a little bit nervous that on those two issues, Vance carried it.
J.D. Vance is much more experienced at this, at public speaking, at defending himself, at pivoting.
It's the audacity. I agree with you that we're in year 9, and no one knows how to cover the audacity. Mm-hmm. The audacity is it someone should have said, stop it, stop, stop. Are you effing kidding me? And they should have dropped that F-bomb, right? I mean, they should have just, this is a debate. This may be the only chance people have to see the difference.
I think we shouldn't lose track. I think even in the civility of the fact that J.D. Vance came to this debate to land a bunch of punches, and he did. He landed a lot of punches in between all the niceties and all of that. And the thing that really stood out to me was that Tim Walz did not seem prepared for it. He didn't respond to a lot of the criticisms and attacks that Vance put on the table. He allowed some clear falsehoods mm-hmm. to just go completely unanswered. He allowed J.D. Vance essentially to dodge on a whole host of issues, on climate change, on the issue of his flip-flopping on Donald Trump. He allowed Vance initially to claim that Trump salvaged the Affordable Care Act. It took him several sentences to get to the part of his answer, Walz's answer, where he actually responded to that. I mean, I think there was a clear lack of preparation and execution here on Walz's part.
I think actually it's the opposite. I think he had too much preparation.
Maybe. Yeah.
He had so many lines that he was clearly trying to say that he didn't listen and said when J.D. Vance said one of the many, many things he really hit Kamala Harris on, not Tim Walz, but Kamala Harris, he didn't respond because he clearly had things in his mind. I think the lack of interviews that he has done with national media, with local media, it showed. He needed more reps.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, J.D. Vance is much more experienced at this, at public speaking, at defending himself, at pivoting.
It's pretty clear. Vance outclassed Walz tonight. I mean, I was watching this and all I could think of was, man, Walz is so in over his head. I mean, can you imagine this guy sitting in the White House Situation Room with that facial expression that's like 50% sheer terror and 50% extreme bafflement? I mean, it was amazing, the split screen difference between a competent Vance and a totally in over his head Walz. The answer on why he lied about his trips to China and the Tiananmen Square thing was probably the worst VP debate meltdown since Stockdale in 92. You know, who am I and why am I here? It was 2.5 minutes of absolute terrible. For Vance, night of redemption. All the political media has told us that Vance was a terrible pick and Walz was going to bring in all these voters. That charade is now over. Walz does not belong at this level of American politics. Vance does. Final verdict, Tim Walz wandered into the wrong bar tonight.
Devastating. And that, as I said earlier, I felt like J.D. Vance missed a few opportunities to really go in for the kill, to really pin him down. But he certainly was a well-informed individual, and you saw it. He actually talked about the issues, something that the other side has strenuously avoided for obvious reasons. The world is burning. I had a show on Monday. I'm nearly done with the show today. I haven't even really been able to discuss one of the worst hurricanes in American history. There's cities in North Carolina that are underwater, or that were. We had this montage ready for Monday's show. Didn't have time for it, and we've updated it a little bit. Here's clip 13.
Now to the latest in the aftermath of Hurricane Helene. This morning in the southeast, millions of Americans are still without power after the storm blew through the region.
Sadly, the storm is being blamed for at least 116 deaths across half a dozen states. That number is expected to rise. Nicole Valdez has more.
Historic flooding from Helene submerged parts of western North Carolina underwater over the weekend.
There was a whole house right there.
This Marshall, North Carolina woman says she fled after the waters reached waist deep.
An unfolding catastrophe in Asheville, North Carolina. Homes and buildings swept away by raging floodwaters that have submerged the town.
It's beyond anything I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Urgent rescue and recovery efforts underway days after Hurricane Helene roared through the southeast, triggering extreme deadly floods. Parts of western North Carolina, in and around Asheville, hit with what officials are calling biblical devastation.
All right, guys, just to give you an understanding of the devastation we're dealing with here. Chimney Rock's gone. Flowering Bridge is gone. And road's gone. So I don't know what they're going to do to get us out of here.
Oh, God. He wins.
I have never seen anything like this. That's Deep Gap Road up there. Big landslide out from underneath it. Big waterfall coming down. The water, you can see, was up to here. Unbelievable. That was the road. That's the roadbed right there.
Whoa!
Now, the latest on the aftermath of Hurricane Helene and the desperate search for people still missing. The death toll climbing to at least 166 people across the southeast.
166, that's the death toll. And as I covered on Monday, while so much of this was happening, Joe Biden's out on the beach, Kamala's in Hollywood with all of the big donors. FEMA drags its feet, showing up days into the disaster. Nothing done to prepare for any of this. Laura Ingraham last night said that Kamala Harris did not do the annual hurricane preparedness briefings that her predecessor Mike Pence did. The annual briefings, just to get ready, just in case there's a disaster. They say Tim Walz was unprepared for the debate. Look at how unprepared. I mean, these people that are trying to take over the country, they're in it over their heads. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to hem in the chaos. It's all around, isn't it? Elon Musk sent out this message Sunday. Here again, keep in mind, this is the world's richest individual. He now owns X. It's the free speech platform of choice. And this only from a couple years ago. Musk said on Sunday, "Very few Americans realize that if Trump is not elected, this will be the last election." You hear the Democrats saying this all the time. But like we point out so often, everything they accuse you of, it's what they're guilty of doing. Musk sees that. This will be the last election if Democrats win. Far from being a threat to democracy, Trump is the only way to save it. This is remarkable that he would even say this, let alone believe it. He says, let me explain. If even 1 in 20 illegals become citizens per year, something that the Democrats are expediting as fast as humanly possible, that would be about 2 million new legal voters in 4 years. The voting margin in the swing states is often less than 20,000 votes. That means if the Democratic Party succeeds, there will be no more swing states. This is their goal. This is what they're aiming for. Moreover, the Biden-Harris administration has been flying asylum seekers who are fast-tracked to citizenship, you know, like the Haitians. You listening, Margaret Brennan? It says here, directly into swing states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, Arizona. It is a surefire way to win every election. America then becomes a one-party state and democracy is over. The only elections will be the Democratic Party primaries. That's a pretty stunning warning coming from Elon Musk, the world's wealthiest man. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.